Don't you want to hear, "Well done, good and faithful servant"? I know I do. That's what we're going to discuss in today's episode of Grace in Focus. Hi, I'm Lucas Kitchen with the Grace Evangelical Society. Thank you for tuning in. We're currently in a series that I'm personally very excited about. The reason is because it's based on a book that I wrote called Eternal Rewards. It's an investigation of what the Bible has to say about a very underrepresented topic in evangelicalism called eternal rewards. Bob and Sean let me sit in for a great series of discussions on my book. I hope you enjoy it. Here's Grace in Focus.
Thanks for tuning into the show. We're doing this series on eternal rewards. And Bob, you were just telling us a story about when you were taking a Greek class on Hebrews, and you very confidently said as a student, "We all know there's only two passages on eternal rewards." Is that right?
Well, I said two major passages. Someone told me I should take classes from a guy named Zane Hodges, that he was really good at teaching how to study the Bible. So I took this course on the book of Hebrews in Greek. In the first class, he starts talking about rewards in the book of Hebrews. Mm. So I raise my hand as soon as there's an opportunity, and I say, "Well, we all know that there's only two major rewards passages, 1 Corinthians 3:10-15, and 1 Corinthians 9:24-27. So it's interesting you say that there's some little discussion of rewards in Hebrews. And he said, "This is so annoying." He said, "I hear this kind of thing all the time." And he said, "There's practically not a page in the New Testament that doesn't talk about eternal rewards." And by the end of that course on Hebrews, I could see what he meant.
Mm. So Lucas has said in previous episodes that at least 24 books of the New Testament talk about eternal rewards. But Zane Hodges said virtually every page has something about eternal rewards.
Right.
Mm. Wow. You were in an environment where eternal rewards was taught, and you thought there were only two passages.
Well, it was because in the previous semester, I had taken a course on 1 Corinthians, and I wrote an exegetical paper on 1 Corinthians 9:14-27. And when I was researching it, I read several articles that said there's only two major passages on rewards, and this is one of them. So I thought I was being real scholarly to raise my hand and say, "We all know there's only two major passages."
So even in an environment where eternal rewards are believed and taught, it was undertaught, at least in your previous classes.
Well, let me give you one other quick story. 5 or 10 years after I got out of Dallas Seminary, I was listening to a series they were doing on eschatology, the doctrine of the last days. And they had Dwight Pentecost and John Walvoord and Charles Ryrie, three of the greats, the old line Dallas people, and they were doing this series on eschatology, and they had one whole episode on the doctrine of eternal rewards. Hmm. And they ended this on not a DVD, what was before, VHS? Uh-huh. So I had a VHS and I'm watching this. They came toward the end of it and they said, "Well, what about Revelation 4:9-10? Which says we're going to cast our crowns before him." And all three of them said, "Oh, yes, the eternal rewards we get, we turn around and give them right back to Jesus, and so we don't keep them. But that's going to give us joy to give him our rewards." And I thought, how sad that here's a discussion of eternal rewards, and the bottom line conclusion from three of the greats from Dallas Seminary is, we don't keep them.
Very interesting. Well, Lucas, we're so glad that you're here with us. In this episode, are we going to talk about Luke chapter 19, verse 11 to 27?
Yeah, that's the plan. We're going to look at the minas. And it's interesting that you mentioned that, Bob, because we should take special note of what happens to the reward at the end of the parable of the minas. And so if you haven't heard that term before, it's not a term we use real often. I don't know that I've ever paid a mina for something, but it was a denomination of money or wealth in the old world. And so this is a parable of Jesus. I think, Sean, you want to just jump into it?
All right. We've talked about this because this is a pivotal passage for a number of reasons.
Right.
And so we've talked about the parable of the minas in our parables series that we just completed. So this might be familiar to you. So verse 11, this is Jesus talking. "Now, as they heard these things, he spoke another parable because he was near Jerusalem and because they thought the kingdom of God would appear immediately. Therefore, he said, 'A certain nobleman went into a far country to receive for himself a kingdom and to return.'" Now, we've mentioned before that this nobleman is Jesus himself.
Right.
Right. He's talking about himself. And he's going to a far country to get a kingdom. And, of course, Jesus came preaching the kingdom, and he's going to rule for 1,000 years in a literal kingdom on earth. So he's talking about himself. Verse 12, so he called 10 of his servants, delivered to them 10 minas, and said to them, do business till I come.
Okay, so that's one group, and there's going to be one judgment for them.
So there's 10 servants.
Right.
Do business till I come. But his citizens hated him. That's the other group.
That's the second group. Yeah. And they're going to be judged separately at the end of this parable.
And sent a delegation after him saying, we will not have this man to reign over us. So the citizens don't want this future ruler to come.
Right.
They're his enemies. Verse 15, and so it was that when he returned, having received the kingdom, he then commanded these servants to whom he had given the money to be called to him, that he might know how much every man had gained by trading. Then came the first, saying, master, your mina has earned 10 minas. And he said to him, well done, good servant, because you were faithful in very little, have authority over 10 cities. And the second came, saying, master, your mina has earned 5 minas. And likewise he said to him, you also be over 5 cities. But he doesn't get the commendation.
Yeah, it's interesting how it shifts the wording just slightly. I mean, they both get a reward of responsibility in this new kingdom, but the wording is not quite the same. One is well done, good and faithful servant. And the other, that part is left out. One interesting thing about this that I think is valuable to say is that since we're not real familiar with how much a mina is today, this would be a little bit surprising to the original audience because managing a mina would be like managing a small business. Going from a small business to being the mayor of a region, you know, I don't even know what you'd call that.
Maybe like a governor.
A governor, yeah. So it would be pretty surprising to have that kind of leap. We've talked about this in a previous show that the reward that Christ gives is in proportion to our faithfulness, but it's a great ratio. I mean, the amount of incentive that we get for being faithful is pretty impressive here.
Right. Like you said, it's like going from a small business to being the governor of a state.
Yeah, yeah, and a mina was about 4 months' worth of income. You're given that, and now you're going to get authority over 10 cities?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Yeah.
Verse 20, then another came saying, master, here is your mina, which I have kept put away in a handkerchief. He hasn't done business. He hasn't invested. He hasn't done any of those things. Let's see how Jesus responds. Well, he keeps talking. For I feared you because you are an austere man. You collect what you did not deposit and reap what you did not sow. And he, the nobleman, says to him, out of your own mouth I will judge you, you wicked servant. You knew that I was an austere man, collecting what I did not deposit and reaping what I did not sow. Why then did you not put my money in the bank that at my coming I might have collected it with interest? And he said to those who stood by, take the mina from him and give it to him who has 10 minas. Interesting.
Bonus city.
But they said to him, master, he has 10 minas. That's not fair. He already has so much. Verse 26, for I say to you that to everyone who has will be given, and from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away from him. But bring here those enemies of mine who did not want me to reign over them and slay them before me.
Now, that last verse is a separate judgment, and it shows the enemies are not at the judgment of the servants.
Okay, so let's recap, because last time we said there are two judgments, right, Lucas?
Yeah.
What are those two judgments?
We have the white throne judgment, which is for unbelievers, and that will happen 1,000 years after the judgment seat of Christ, which is for believers. And these two judgments have different purposes. The judgment seat of Christ is not to determine whether or not you get into the kingdom of heaven. It's to determine what type of reward. We might even say what type of responsibility. We see that in this parable that you'll have in the kingdom of heaven. And so this is what the servants are experiencing. It's an analogy for the judgment seat. But then he shifts right there at the end. We see these enemies. This is the group that sent the delegation after the nobleman who was going to receive the kingdom. They sent the delegation and said, we don't want him to rule over us. We don't want him as king. And now their outcome, the result of that, is different. It's very different from what the servants experienced. Because what's interesting about the servants is even the unfaithful servant, he still carries the title servant at the end of the story. He's still a servant. He's not kicked out. He doesn't get his head chopped off. He's not, you know, murdered or whatever. He's still in the household, even though his outcome was different. But this other group, these enemies, they're not in the household, and their outcome is very different.
Their outcome is slay them
in
my presence, which I think relates to Revelation 20:14. Then death and Hades were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death, right? Wow. Everybody has the first death, physical death. The second death is being cast into the lake of fire. So I think when he says, slay them here in my presence, it means cast them into the lake of fire.
Interesting. Yeah. So that first judgment's not about life and death. It's about rewardability, about responsibility. But that second judgment is a life and death situation.
These are two separate judgments. They're not at all the same.
So by analogy, it's like the difference between the judgment seat of Christ, which is for believers, for rewards, versus the great white throne judgment, which is for unbelievers, to confirm that, yeah, you don't have eternal life and this is why you're going to get tormented.
And also to determine how much torment, because they're not all evidently going to have the same amount.
Well, what's also interesting here, and I don't know if we have enough time to do this, but the Jesus' different responses in this judgment for rewardability, right? The first servant, high praise. Second servant, no praise. Third servant, he gets a rebuke.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You go from good servant to wicked servant.
Yeah.
Both servants, but good and bad.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting to me. I really wrestled when I was writing this chapter. I really wrestled with what exactly the wicked servant is saying when he says, you know, he responds. He gives a reason for why he didn't do any work. And he says, for I feared you because you are a harsh man. You collect what you did not deposit and reap what you did not sow. I think what he's saying is, I didn't believe I was going to get a reward for it. I believed that you were going to take away everything from me that I made. Hmm. You were going to absorb the profit, and I would just be zeroed out, and I would have nothing. He believes something about the nobleman that is just absolutely wrong. The nobleman is eager to reward. He rewards the faithfulness of his other two servants. Even at the end of the parable, we see that the servants are still identified as the one who has 10 cities. That servant still had that reward even going into the kingdom. It wasn't taken away. He didn't cast it before the throne or whatever the phrase might be. He retained that reward. And so that's really encouraging to me to know that the rewards we receive based on our faithfulness here will be used in the kingdom.
Lucas, what a great thought to end this show. Tune in next time as we continue this series on eternal rewards.
A big thank you to Sean and Bob for letting me sit in on that great discussion. That was a lot of fun. Now, you may want to go deeper on this subject of eternal rewards. I think a great place to start is on our website, faithalone.org. In addition to picking up a copy of my book called Eternal Rewards, we have lots of free resources ready for you right there on the site. Subscription to our print magazine, our podcast, our blog posts, all kinds of stuff that's designed to help you grow. I hope you'll take advantage of all of our free resources as soon as you can. Do that by going to faithalone.org. Hey, and by the way, while you're on the website, I'd like to encourage you to consider becoming a financial partner with us. You can find out how to do that and much more right there on faithalone.org. Now, we love to hear from listeners, and if you're a listener that likes to reach out, I hope you'll do that. I'll give you our email address so that you can do exactly that. It's radio@faithalone.org. That's radio@faithalone.org. Well, next time on the program, we're going to talk about the fact that some people think that ruling with Christ will be no fun. Tune in for that. I'm Lucas Kitchen with the Grace Evangelical Society, and until next time, let's keep grace in focus.